Hey everyone, welcome to episode 1 of Background Noise. I'm your host, Sarah Bannon. Now, like any podcast in its infancy, I'm sure that the first several episodes are going to be a little rough. I haven't decided if I have a radio voice or not, but I suppose we're about to find out. I'm not gonna lie, sitting here with a microphone in my face is a little uncomfortable, but I'm excited. I think it's going to be a good experience, and if anything, I'm stepping outside of my comfort zone, which is something we should all do every once in a while. Today's topic is something I think we all know a little bit about, but let's get into it. Marquis Mills Converse was born October 23rd, 1861 in New Hampshire, a Libra. I couldn't find a lot of information about Marquis and his childhood, but I do know his father was a man named Peter Mills Converse, who married Marquis's mother, his second wife. Her name was Sarah. Marquis Mills Converse was a manager at a shoe manufacturing plant, and in 1908, he founded the Converse Rubber Shoe Company in Massachusetts. He was 47 years old at the time. Now, I want you to take this as a sign that you can do anything no matter your age. You don't have to have it figured out by 20, 30, 40, 50, or even 60. This guy was going places, okay? The Converse Rubber Shoe Company originally made a form of winter rubberized soled shoes for women, men, and children. They produced these winterized boots and what sources refer to as rubbers. Take that how you will. He started this company with $250,000, which when I looked it up, it's equal to about $8 million today. Thanks, inflation. Just a short 1 year after its founding, the plant had 350 employees, and by 1910, their production line made up to 4,000 pairs of shoes daily. The popularization of basketball is truly what led to the company's great success and takeoff. However, it wasn't until 1917, when the canvas basketball shoes we all know and love came to be. However, in 1923, a basketball star, Charles Chuck Taylor, sound familiar, requested a redesign of the shoe to add more flexibility and movement. Chuck literally walked into Converse headquarters and complained that his feet were sore. He quickly became the brand's first player ambassador. He joined the sales team and traveled around the U.S. promoting and sharing the shoe with basketball players at basketball clinics. 1932 is where we see the classic Chuck Taylor logo patch sewn onto the canvas of everyone's favorite shoe. Chuck continuously worked for Converse right up until his death in 1969. Nice. Something interesting I also found was that after the Converse firm went into bankruptcy, there was a couple suspicious deaths. This led to the company falling into the hands of the Stone family in 1933. During the time, Converse Company had the corner on the shoe market. I also found it interesting that during this period of time, Converse focused plenty of its time and resources on creating items like parkas, protective footwear, and boots to the U.S. Army during World War II. I thought that was pretty cool. After the war ended in 1945, they began to focus more on the civilian market. In 1946, the company expanded from the one plant to two, one being in Massachusetts and the other being in Puerto Rico. By 1969, they had multiple other plants, including one in Maine and one in Rhode Island. East Coast represent, anybody? It's also worth mentioning that during the 1950s, the brand began moving towards fashion instead of only being closely associated with sports and athleticism. Go sports ball. I think we all remember that one photo of James Dean sporting his Converse sneakers. We love a bad boy. Converse was slowly becoming the shoe for everybody. They had many designs and many versatile uses. They weren't only creating the classic canvas Converse high top that we are all thinking about today. Now, I was surprised to also find out that in the 1970s, Converse made more than just shoes. They made multiple other types of athletic equipment. Everything from hockey pucks to mouth guards, boots, shoes, and they even supplied their rubber compound to other industrial manufacturers. At this time in the 70s, they had three separate sales divisions: sporting goods, footwear, and industrial. 39 years after the Stone family purchased the Converse Shoe Company, in 1972, the Altra Corporation purchased the company. And the 39-year-old family business made that much success? Like, talk about an American dream. Also in 1972, Converse Shoe Company acquired B.F. Goodrich Company, effectively making Charlotte, North Carolina a giant distribution center for their products. Now, 7 years later, in 1979, Converse was manufacturing 12 million pairs of shoes per year. Now, hold on to that number in your mind, because it's going to be important later on down the line. 1979, 12 million pairs of shoes a year. They were the leading pick in basketball shoes across the nation. In 1982, it was purchased again by a group of senior executives led by Richard B. Lloyd, who negotiated a price for $100 million. It was also at this point that company stock became available for purchase on the NASDAQ stock market. 2 years later is when we see the spread of the Converse across the globe in 1984. Manufacturers and distributions of the shoe can be found in Japan, and years later, in 1988, Converse's international reach had grown over 60%. We're talking European, Asian, and North American countries with licensed distributors in over 90 countries worldwide. Wow. Now, most of the globalization of Converse can be attributed to the globalization of basketball. The two have always kind of seemed to go hand in hand. Well, in the 80s and 90s, we see a huge shift in the Converse culture, as I'm going to call it. We see the counterculture of rebellion, rock and roll, and all-around grungy vibes. We also see popular artists rocking their dirty canvas shoes literally everywhere. Some attribute this to Guns N' Roses' unofficial endorsement of the shoe in the 1980s. In the 1990s, we see other popular bands like Green Day and our favorite queen, Winona Ryder, kicking it in their kicks. Now, I was born in 1907, and while I don't personally remember those times, I do know for a fact that all the cool kids in high school wore Converse high tops. It's me. I'm the cool kid. Now, by the end of 1997, Converse had produced over 550 million pairs of sneakers in 1 year alone. That is a very stark contrast compared to the 12 million pairs of sneakers made in 1979. Okay, we see you. It's also said in 2001, there were rumors about the company declining and failing their finances. According to sources, this led to a mass hysteria and a public outcry for the devotion of their beloved shoe. Turns out these rumors weren't just rumors, and they were in fact true. In 2003, Nike actually bought Converse out and began to sort of reincarnate some of the older versions of the shoe from the past. It is also said that a lot of hardcore Converse fans were not happy at the fact that a more mainstream company bought out the shoe, since it had always kind of symbolized rock and roll counterculture and rebellion for so long. By 2013, Converse's vintage shoe was selling at a 16% higher rate than the quarter previously. This jump in profit actually caused Converse brand shoes to be more profitable than Nike's own styles. We love to see it. Now today, we can buy Converse in literally any color. We can customize them to be whatever we want. There's brand designs, collaborations, collectors, and a huge community built around the single canvas shoe. In 2021, Nike brought in $44.54 billion in revenue. I couldn't specifically find out how much of that was attributed to the sale of Converse alone, but we know Nike's making a major profit. Now, whether your passion is in fashion or finances, there's a lot of good history in both of these topics concerning Converse All-Stars. I wanted to make sure I had a good mix of this information, and personally, I find the financial part to be a little boring. But I think it's pretty safe to say that Converse All-Star High Tops are probably the most popular shoe of all time, and it's probably the only style of shoe that was popular when your grandma was a teacher, and it's also popular to this day. You can't see me right now, but I am wearing a pair of black Converse All-Star High Tops. It has been a top fashion for decades. Let's be honest, they look good with everything. Dresses, skirts, jeans, shorts, sweatpants, basketball shorts. I wore Converse High Tops to both of my proms. We really see this fashion take off in the 1980s, and a beautiful classic unisex style made from rubber and canvas become the classic staple in everybody's closet. While comfortable soles and flexible canvas high tops were great for running, walking, sports, they're also great to just go to the mall with your friends. Malls don't exist anymore. I'm not really sure why I had that in here. Anyway, this is kind of a short run trial of the podcast. I'm still trying to figure out the whole microphone thing, and I wanted to do just like a short little research topic to get the ball rolling and start my podcast, I guess, just podcast. Anyway, I hope you guys enjoyed. I hope you guys have a great day, and remember, if you ever need a little background noise, See, Ashley Flowers really like has this down pat. Okay. My name is Sarah Bannon. No, I'm just kidding. If you need a little background noise, you can always count on me, your background bestie. Thanks. Brush your teeth. Take a shower.